here, I realize I don't have this.
Okay, I'm going to call to order our regular meeting of the Orange County Parks Commission for Thursday, September the 1st at 6 o'clock. I'd like to welcome everyone. At this time, we'll please have a roll.
Chair Kuz. Vice Chair Schauber.
Here.
Commissioner Ashland.
Here.
Commissioner Wellborn.
Here.
Commissioner Hansen.
Here.
Commissioner Muller.
Here.
We have quorum.
Thank you. At this time, we'll take a participation from the public. The public may address the commission on items of public interest that are within the jurisdiction of this commission and are not contained in tonight's agenda. If you wish to speak, please complete a speaker form, which are located on the end of the table, and submit it to the clerk. Please note that each speaker will be given 3 minutes. And Mr. Clerk, do we have anybody?
We have not received any public speaker requests.
Okay, is there anyone in the public that would like to come in, or anybody in the audience? Okay, if not, I'll close the public comment opportunity. And we'll now move on to our next item, which is our consent calendar, which is items A through B. Is there anything that any of the commissioners would like to pull? Is there anything staff would like to pull? Is there anything the public would like to pull? Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second? I'll take the second. Roll call, please.
Vice Chair Schauber?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashland?
Abstain. I wasn't here.
Commissioner Wellborn?
Yes.
Commissioner Hansen?
Yes.
Commissioner Muller?
Abstain, I wasn't there.
Okay, we'll move on to discussion calendar. By the way, that passes. Items A through C, we'll begin with item A. This is OC Community Resources Brown Act and Bylaws Template Training. I believe we have someone that will be handling that, please.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I'll go ahead and introduce. Good evening, commissioners. We have two items on the agenda that are going to be provided by our county council members. We have two in attendance today, Mark Batarse and John Cleveland, over to my left, and also Nicole Swain, who's an administrative manager for the county, will be helping provide the presentation for the first item. The first item, as you see, is the Brown Act and Bylaws Training, which is provided by the county as a requirement. As your advisory body is subject to both Brown Act and the Board Bylaws Template. So at this point, I will hand it off to Mr. Cleveland and Ms. Swain for the presentation.
Welcome and thank you.
I mean, I feel like I didn't have to do an introduction. That was so good. So, good evening, everyone. And I'd just like to start by thanking the Community Parks Commission for having John and I here tonight to review these important topics with you. And I also would like to share a little history behind the why for the conception of this training presentation. Our OC Community Resources leadership team values our commissioners and appreciates your services to this department, our county, and community. So they sought out a way to offer our new and even experienced members, county staff, and many participants a training on the most inquired about topics. County Council graciously collaborated with us on this presentation to provide all of you with a detailed review of these areas of interest. Also, just want to note, we will have an opportunity for questions at the end of the training presentation.
We just want to let you know we normally ask questions along the way.
Okay, well, we'll work with it.
We'll wait.
So I'm going to skip the introduction slide because Joanne already graciously introduced us, so thank you.
Okay, sorry, turn off the 3 minute timer, please.
Yeah, start the timer.
Okay. I'm just teasing.
So here are some topics that we'll be reviewing today. We have the Brown Act, AB 361, the County Executive Office Policy and Board Approved Template, as well as a general overview of bylaws. Okay, so with that, I'm gonna go ahead and hand this over to John to get us started with a review of the important history, key concepts, and legality of the Brown Act.
Thank you, Nicole. Okay, the Brown Act generally requires all meetings of a legislative body to be open and public. The basic rule is that meetings of a legislative body must be open and public. The actions and deliberations of legislative bodies must be conducted openly. The purpose is to facilitate public participation and enable people to be informed so they keep control over their government and potential misuse of the democratic process. There's a few important definitions that govern the applicability of Brown Act and when it may or may not apply. Those include the legislative body definition and local agency definition. A legislative body includes the governing board of a local agency or any local board created by statute, and any commission, committee, or board or body created by formal action of a legislative body. A local agency includes the county or any board, commission, or agency thereof. There's an exception to the definition of that defined term we just covered, legislative body, and that's for ad hoc committees. It's an important exception for certain BCCs, that is boards, commissions, and councils. An ad hoc advisory committee composed solely of the members of a legislative body that are less than a quorum of that legislative body is not itself a legislative body. However, standing committees, even if composed of less than a quorum of the legislative body, are still subject to the open meeting requirements of the Brown Act. The Brown Act applies to meetings of a legislative body. That's another defined term. A meeting is any congregation of a majority of the members of a legislative body at the same time and location to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of that legislative body. Members of the legislative body would want to avoid inadvertently creating one of those defined meetings. And there's a prohibition against serial meetings. Majority of members of the legislative body shall not, outside of the meeting authorized in the chapter, that's an improperly agendized public open meeting, use a series of communications of any kind to directly or through intermediaries discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item of business that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. So just take note that this could be in the form of emails, or in person, or snail mail communications. However, one-way briefings are permitted. The prohibition on serial meetings shall not be construed as preventing an employee of or official of a local agency from engaging in separate conversations or communications with members of the legislative body in order to answer questions basically brief the members of the legislative body. So that one-way communication exception allows for informing members of the legislative body without running afoul of the Brown Act. There are certain other narrow exceptions to the meeting definition. This is a brief overview. We're going to touch on these exceptions, but if you ever feel like one of these may apply, I'd encourage you to contact staff and county council to make sure that the details are ironed out for your particular facts and circumstances. A meeting does not include individual conversations between members of the legislative body and any other person, provided they're not serial meetings. Attendance at conferences open to the public are not meetings. Attendance at open and notice meetings of another local agency, like a city, would not constitute a meeting. And attendance at purely social or ceremonial occasions would not constitute a meeting.
Can I say a question on that?
Sure.
So we have this happening in our city, but attendance at an open and notice meeting with another local agency, even if there's a quorum of this agency there and they're speaking at the podium.
Yeah. So your question is getting to the fact-specific nature of this exception, and we really want to have this meeting dive into what you're asking about, but you would not be able to, generally speaking, you would not be able to discuss or deliberate amongst yourselves if everyone else is out in the audience of the city council meeting and no one's discussing or meeting and they're just in the audience participating in that open house meeting.
Right, I understand we could be in the same location, but if even one of us stood up and started speaking about something that could be coming from this board, would that constitute Brown Act violation? I'll answer that, but the district attorney said yes. This is things weird you want to say.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was a weird one we had. We actually had it happen twice, and we didn't have to say it.
Yeah.
So, just.
So, it's sort of falling up.
It is. I mean, it was weird. We didn't know. So, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Talk about that.
No problem. Thank you. So finally, attendance at an open and notice standing committee meeting provided that members of the legislative body at large attend only as observers. And that's getting to the point we just briefly touched on, where your role at that standing committee meeting needs to be negligible. You can't participate as an active participant. You need to attend only as an observer. Okay, let's turn to a few points on regular meetings. This is about agendas and notice requirements. Each legislative body shall provide the time and place for the regular meetings, and such regular meetings must typically be conducted within the boundaries of the agency's jurisdiction. The notice must be posted 72 hours before the regular meeting at a location freely accessible to members of the public and on the agency's primary website. That agenda must contain a brief general description of each item of business to be transacted or discussed. Unless there's an exception provided for in the law, and those are few and far between, the local agency legislative body cannot take action on anything that's not properly agenda. So you've got to get it on the agenda if you're going to take action on it. Okay, let's turn to special meetings. There's a little bit of a difference here on notice and agenda requirements. A special meeting may be called at any time by the presiding officer of the legislative body or by the local agency, by a majority vote of the members of the legislative body, by posting the notice and also delivering the notice to the members of the legislative body and any member of the media who's requested a copy of such notice. That notice must be delivered personally at least 24 hours before the time of the meeting. And again, the call and notice shall specify the item of business to be transacted or discussed at that special meeting. And only the properly agendized item may be the subject of official action by the legislative body at that special meeting. There's also emergency meetings provided for in the Brown Act. An emergency is defined as work stoppage, crippling activity, or other activity that severely impairs public health, safety, or both. The legislative body may hold emergency meetings without complying with that 24-hour special meeting notice that we just discussed, but there still needs to be telephonic notice. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about the open and public meeting requirements for the Brown Act meetings. Regular and special meetings must allow the public to address the body on any item appearing on the agenda at or before the time the legislative body considers that item. The Brown Act generally requires that all meetings be open to the public. Each regular meeting agenda shall also provide an opportunity for members of the public to address the legislative body on any item of interest that's within the subject matter jurisdiction of the body, not just agendized items. Finally, legislative body must report votes and abstentions in public. Secret ballots are not allowed. So this is a really common question. When can an item not appearing on the posted agenda be discussed or acted upon? The general rule is that no official action may be taken on non-agendized matters, but members of the legislative body or staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons. There's also a few other narrow exceptions we'll cover here. Member of the legislative body or staff may ask a question for clarification, make a brief announcement, or make a brief report on his or her own activities. And members of the legislative body may provide a reference to staff or other resources for factual information, or request staff to come back or report back at a subsequent meeting concerning any matter discussed, or take action to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. There are penalties for violating the Brown Act, and they could include misdemeanors. A member of a legislative body who attends a meeting or actions taken in violation of Brown Act, where that member intends to deprive the public of information, where the member also knows or has reason to know the public is entitled to receive that information, could be found guilty of a misdemeanor. Much more common is civil enforcement or civil lawsuits. The district attorney or any member of the public may bring an action to stop or prevent violations of the Brown Act. And a court may invalidate or declare an action null and void if that action is taken in violation of the Brown Act. Attorney's fees themselves are a significant deterrent to violating the Brown Act because a prevailing plaintiff in such a lawsuit is entitled to recover attorney's fees and court costs. That concludes the Brown Act portion. I'm going to turn it back over to Nicole for AB 361.
Thank you, John. So the next section is pertaining to Assembly Bill 361, and although your commission is not operating remotely, we felt that AB 361 facts and publication highlights might be relevant just in case we ever should have to go back to that model. So in 2021, Governor Newsom signed AB 361, amending the Ralph M. Brown Act to provide additional provisions allowing meetings of legislative bodies to be conducted via teleconference. Under these provisions, local agency legislative bodies chose to utilize the teleconferencing under certain circumstances. Sorry, try not to read too much, but those circumstances are if our governor has proclaimed a state of emergency and any way or any of the following circumstances. State or local officials have imposed recommended measures to promote social distancing. If the meeting is being held for the purpose of determining by majority vote whether as a result of the emergency that meeting in person would present an imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees, or if the legislative body determines that as a result of emergency meetings in person, it could present imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees. So with that being said, I think I may have skipped forward one, two, three. There are still requirements of these meetings.
Is there a sunset clause to the to AB 361?
No.
Is there an end date?
Okay, they'll just renew when they have to.
Thank you, Counselor.
I mean, if they renew, I don't know. We'll see. So, okay, there are still requirements if the meetings are being held via teleconference under AB 361, and those requirements apply, requirements that do apply are listed here. This is really just for future reference, should your commission ever need them or choose to go back to this model. I'm not gonna read through all of them, but you can refer to them later. I do think an important requirement to highlight is that findings must be made every 30 days in order to continue to conduct teleconference meetings if you're choosing to use that AB 361. And the body must also find that it has reconsidered the circumstances of the state of emergency. Okay, so moving on to some details of the county policy as far as the CEO board-approved bylaws template and a few other key highlights from the policy itself. The CEO policy was approved in September 2021, and it implements directives from the Board of Supervisors to our BCCs that fall under the jurisdiction of the board. As a matter of policy, the board's commissions, committees, and the board commissions and committees, always mess that up, that fall under board jurisdiction are asked to update their bylaws in accordance with the board-approved bylaws template. So over the last several months, County Council and the CEO's office have been coordinating with our departments to update those bylaws and bring them before the Board of Supervisors for approval. Also important to note in the policy is the at-large appointments changes, which are still pursuant to Board Rule of Procedure Rule 16, but those minor changes to that as well. The OC Parks Commission is under board jurisdiction and is administratively supported by OC Community Resources. This is why OCCR and County Council have been working with the Commission in support of the review and revisions that are consistent with the new CEO board-approved template. A little bit more about policy is that bylaws should serve as rules. Bylaws should serve as rules for internal administration and management of the Commission. However, if local, state, or federal authority require additional elements that don't appear in the approved template, or if local, state, or federal authority necessitate modifications of elements that appear in the template, then the BCC can deviate from the template.
We're going to cover a few general bylaws, concepts that are applicable to your commission and others in the county, and then we'll cover a few points specific to the proposed bylaws that you're going to consider later today on the agenda. So the bylaws of the county's commissions, committees, and boards contain the purpose, duties, rules, organizational structure, and operating procedures for BCCs. The county supervisors, as a legislative body in charge of the county, approves the county's bylaws and plays a role in appointing members to commissions. Commissions function under the authority of the board, and citizen members of commissions provide the public with a channel of communication and input to the board and provide the opportunity for citizens to participate in government. Commissions generally serve as advisory bodies to the board, as authorized by the respective bylaws. Your bylaws are going to set the rules of the road for you. Bylaws generally describe the procedure by which commissions advocate, communicate with the public, and work with county staff. Generally, commissions do not engage in political advocacy, do not take positions on pending legislation or legislative issues without the approval of the county. That's because the Board of Supervisors directs the county's legislative efforts and has the authority to make policy decisions for the county. And the county's Executive Office of Legislative Affairs is the lead department for the county, the county's legislative efforts. County staff from OC Community Resources and the County Executive Office of Legislative Affairs can help commissions ensure that they draft communications and perform their duties in a manner consistent with their respective bylaws. County's legislative platform. And that department, this slide in particular, is designed to just create uniformity and consistency across the county and all of the commissions. Now we'll turn to a few points specific to your proposed bylaws that I understand are up for consideration later today. The bylaws cover the purpose and functions of your commission. As you know, the commission's purpose is to advise the Board of Supervisors and the Director of Orange County Parks. Bylaws also set forth several functions. I won't read them all here, but they generally include advising on plans and policies for open spaces, advising on matters pertaining to open spaces, advising on administrative policy for the director, and acting as a board of administrative review on appeals for the director's administrative decisions. The bylaws also cover membership. They provide for 7 members. The terms for the members depend on the appointing authority. If appointed by a member of the Board of Supervisors, commissioners serve concurrent with the supervisor's term of office. But if appointed by the City Selection Committee, a commissioner's term of office will be 4 years. The duties of the members include, of course, performing commission responsibilities, complying with county policies and the county code of ethics, and operating within the designated purposes of the commission. Bylaws outline duties of all the officers, including the chair, vice chair, executive officer. In the event the chair is absent, the vice chair shall perform the chair's duties. And the executive officer of the commission is the director of OC Parks. The executive officer is responsible for helping to prepare the meetings and agendas, attending the correspondence, and serving as the custodian of records. And as you know, OC Parks staff supports the commission. The bylaws also confirm that your commission is subject to and shall comply with the Brown Act. And that kind of ties back to the beginning of this presentation. It defines quorum as 15% plus one of the commission's membership. and it covers the process for removal and resignation of commission members. Finally, the bylaws cover conflicts of interest provisions that are important for you to be mindful of as you conduct your business. Members shall abstain from voting on any issue in which they may be personally interested to avoid a conflict of interest in accordance with all applicable laws, and refrain from engaging in any behavior that conflicts with the best interests of the county. Conflicts of interest questions are highly fact specific, and I'd encourage you to consult with OCCR staff or county council on any conflicts of interest questions. And the bylaws also provide for commission members to file statements of economic interest and attend ethics training such as AB 1234, and that's an annual requirement everyone should be complying with. Members shall not engage in political advocacy using the name, emblem, or any other identifier of the commission, or use county assets or resources for sectarian activity.
That's one other question.
Yes.
So, what's political advocacy? Is that running for office?
Could I
run for office somewhere and say, oh, I'm an Orange County Parks Commissioner?
You wouldn't want to use the name, emblem,
can't use an emblem.
Or identifier of the commission.
You can't wear your t-shirt. No. You can say you're an Orange County Parks Commissioner, you just can't use the logos.
You don't want to use county resources, including the logo.
So this isn't my campaign staff to promote this?
Not this week, Ben.
Not this week? Okay.
So I have a question on conflict of interest in general being on a commission. Since we don't ultimately make any decisions, we make recommendations. So the supervisors are the ones that are actually going to make the vote, the binding vote. We don't. So how is sitting on this commission any different from me actually lobbying a supervisor?
Yeah, let me interject. This is Mark Batarsi, Senior Deputy County Counsel. I am presenting or discussing the next item, which is specific to the adoption of the bylaws, and I'm here today specifically to help you guys or help address any questions or concerns specifically that one. So I plan to address that then if that's
okay. That's all. All right.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
Sure.
I couldn't figure out which one of you was here to do that.
Thankfully, Mark. So that concludes our slides, and Mark is going to discuss conflicts of interest specifically. But if there's any general questions, I'm happy to answer. Yes, sir.
So half of us is 3.5, one more is 4.5. We need 5, but we need 3-2 vote passes, right?
You're challenging me out of my mouth here.
No, I mean, we have a little, the county has, they have a certain number of people. So we got into it where how many people were here versus how many people belong versus how many majorities so we can get a vote done.
So majority of the quorum or majority of the quorum?
Yeah, that's what we were.
The revised bylaws that the board has approved as a matter of policy includes that change. That okay. clarifies that for you, which is a majority of the quorum.
I'd like to add to that. Actually, the bylaws revision that you guys adopted a few meetings ago included that voting majority policy that was prescribed already in the board bylaws template.
Perfect.
It's just one more question. So we're voting on a template here that's used for every other commission, correct?
Well, under board jurisdiction, yes.
What's that?
If it's under board jurisdiction.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. So it's more of a question that you're going to get back to answer at that. But if the supervisors are going to adopt this anyway, why are we here talking about it? Because they want all the commissions under their jurisdiction operating under the exact same set of bylaws, correct?
Yes, and I plan to address that on the next item, but I'll just say briefly.
But I figured you would, so I wanted to ask that question so I forget later.
If I can, I think that the procedure that we're looking at, because we have two different items, I think we would close this item, correct, and then open the bylaws item, and then we can discuss this.
That's our agenda next.
Yeah, and I think that's what Mark's alluded to, is that if we can do that procedure, then we can go ahead and start answering these questions. And I don't want to end your presentation if you have more, but
thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any other questions of our two distinguished speakers? Okay, thank you very much for that. At this time, then, we can move on to our item B, which is the commission bylaws amendments. These are amendments to the commission bylaws that are proposed to be consistent with the bylaw template issued by the Board of Supervisors. We spent a great deal of time over a few meetings discussing this, and so we'll get clarification on anyone's questions. All yours.
Thank you. Again, Mark Petarsi, the County Council's office. Thank you for having us here today to help address some of the issues and concerns that were raised last time this item was brought to the commission. In case you don't know, I have the pleasure of serving both as lead advisory counsel both to OC Parks and now the County Procurement Office. In the course of that advisory work, occasionally conflicts questions arise. It's a little unconventional to discuss the conflict issues in this setting, and we always welcome if any specific issues or questions come up. That's what we're here for, and I encourage anyone to reach out either to staff or to myself anytime there are any specific questions, and hopefully we can help navigate those for you. So, in listening to the last commission meeting where this item was discussed, a couple of sort of general questions were at hand, which was really why is the conflict of interest provision, which is under Article 12 of the proposed revised bylaws, why is it there? And whether or not it applies to you as a commissioner in an advisory capacity to the board. Those are good questions. And I'm hoping to, at least in a general sense, address those. And then again, if there are specific issues to each of you that you want to discuss afterwards, I'm more than happy to engage. As was presented in the item before this, so the board did adopt this as a matter of policy to create some consistency with all of the board's commissions and committees under its jurisdiction. The OC Parks Commission being one of those. And in doing that, the board very thoughtfully, and I understand that this item took several passes on the board agenda before the final policy was adopted, crafted it in a way that the board, under its authority, wanted SCCs to conduct themselves, and the general parameters that should exist in each of their bylaws for consistencies, except where there are other legal parameters that need to be adhered to. For instance, the Parks Commission exists pursuant to an Orange County codified ordinance. And to the extent that this template would be in conflict with that, the directive to us was to help align that the best we can with the board's adopted policy and adopted template. So, really why we're here and why this item is here is because the board directed us to. The board directed us to adopt its template to the best that can be under the, except for any legal parameters that would create any deviations from the template. Whether the conflicts provision applies to you is really a loaded question. Short answer is yes. The conflicts body of law is very complex. There are various bodies of law that govern conflicts of interests to which you are subject as commissioners on this commission. That includes Government Code 1090, which deals with conflicts that arise when a contract is being approved, when a contract is involved. It includes the Political Reform Act, which is similar to 1090, but without necessarily a contract at hand. It includes where public officials are making decisions or involved in influencing or the making of a governmental decision. Those are things that each of you do in sitting on this commission. Then there's the gift ban ordinance, which is, you're also subject to that, which we won't necessarily need to get in to today. But generally with conflicts, it's either going to fall under 1090 or under the Political Reform Act. Each of those is difficult for us attorneys to wrap our heads around because of the way that the black letter law and regulation has been interpreted in the courts and for the Political Reform Act by the FPPC, the state regulatory agency that enforces the Political Reform Act. The other thing that's of concern is that 1090 or the conflicts issues implicate not just, you know, civil recourse and consequences. This is one of the unique areas that subject public officials to potential criminal liability. So it's one of the areas that's particularly sensitive, in that the board, in adopting this policy, it includes a language that wants to avoid even the appearance of such conflict. For that reason, it's just something the county, the board, and I'm sure all of us sitting here never want to have to be put in a position to defend ourselves or be accused of doing something untoward. So the board included this provision to reflect what the law would require, even if this provision was not included in the bylaws. So let me say that again. Even if we strike all of this, all of these rules still apply. So the board just wanted to formalize so that, and for good reason. I mean, we all have questions about conflict of interest. The board's trying to at least make it clear here for each of us what's really expected of its board, you know, members of its BCCs. And I think that makes sense. That said, I understand there are some other specific questions that we can address, but as a general matter, the conflicts issue is something that we want to be above reproach in every way, so that we're never in a position of being in a defensive position having to justify why the conflict didn't exist. When people come to me with conflicts questions, oftentimes there is no conflict and there's no concern, but that level of concern to even approach us and ask those questions is really what the board is really going for here, so that we can help help you to even avoid the appearance of conflict.
On the offense, not on the defense.
Correct. So with that, I know there was a specific question relating to the reference to personal versus financial interest. And I thought that was a good point that was raised, because we would think conflict of interest just deals with financial interest. Interestingly enough, the case law that interprets, so let me go back and say this as another concerning point. There are certain elements to both the 1090 and the Political Reform Act. And if you go look at read the case law, you'll see how broadly courts and the FPPC have construed those. So for instance, you know, there's a whole body of law on what is a contract under 1090. Okay? It could include any contract, any amendment, any work order, okay? Very broadly construed. What's a government official under 1090? Courts have said that includes independent contractors. They're not even employees of the public agency if certain criteria are met. Very broad interpretation, broad application, which is a scary thing when there are criminal implications. You want to make sure that you're not going into dangerous territory in any way. What does it mean to be involved in the making of a contract? You know, is it actually sitting, you know, on the board or commission and voting on an item, or does that include discussing it and influencing it? Interestingly, and it goes to your question, Commissioner. This commission is under the jurisdiction of the board and is advisory to the board. The way the law looks at each of you, they hold you in very high regard. Each of you are very influential. Each of you have decision-making power. Each of you influence important governmental decisions in your capacity as a commissioner. Although you're advisory to the board, oftentimes, more often than not, items that are recommended by this commission go to the board and are voted on in the affirmative without even any discussion. Courts have specifically said that factor alone makes you very important and very influential and subject to these conflict rules. So although it is merely an advisory body under the jurisdiction of the board, the law holds you in very high regard to the extent that you're subject to these conflict rules. So I hope that addresses that question. Good. As far as the personal versus financial issue, you know, getting to the element of what is a financial interest, the courts and the FPPC have looked well beyond an actual realized financial gain. They've looked at, they've interpreted the financial interest as even the hope for financial interest. There's a thought and a hope that that the public official would benefit. And the courts have interchangeably utilized the term personal interest and financial interest. So that is kind of a loose term, but it is not out of the blue. It is what the courts use in interpreting the interests under the conflicts of interest.
But it is loose.
That's my personal opinion, but that's the court's use of it, and that's why it's here.
And I'm the one that raised this issue tomorrow. I raised it at another commission meeting as well. It's awkward for me to vote on an item that I take issue with. And the issue I take on it is the personal versus economic. Economic is easy. Personal is a little more nebulous. If I sat on the board of directors of the C.N. Sage Audubon Society, should I even have this job here? I don't have an economic interest in the C.N. Sage Audubon Society, but I have a personal interest in what they do, their bylaws, and what their focus is. And that is possible it could be in conflict with what we're doing here. Should I abstain from voting on things that affect, you know,
the county,
the county or them, you know?
Well, if you look at the language of this provision, it includes both the construct of the legal requirements for conflict of interest, but it also includes anything that's in conflict with the interests of the county. So I can't speak to your specific role on that other board commissioner, but according to the board, they want all of their commissioners to act in a manner that's consistent with the county's interest. That's
no, and that's fair. I'll buy it.
Good.
Well, but those are reappointed. David and I are through city selection, so we don't have a direct appointment. So how do they address that? So I'm not appointed by the county commissioner, supervisors. I go through the city selection, so I'm appointed by the mayor. And what's the best interest of those mayors and those cities may be in conflict with the county. So how do you resolve that for the two commissioners that are not appointed?
Well, there's an easy fix when an instance like that comes up, and it's to recuse yourself. Because in theory,
well, that's interesting because I was appointed to represent those folks, and I have to recuse myself because of a conflict with the county.
That item.
On that, so that's an interesting one.
Joe, that's really good.
It's a good point, and it's something that could occasionally come up when we're revealing when you're serving for separate public entities that could find themselves in conflict.
We've been voting on land like landlocked kind of scenarios in different cities where the cities buy it from the county. You know, so that's come up a couple different times. And so that falls into that category right away.
So real quick, I think you've already explained this to me, but I just want to make sure I'm straight. So if I find myself, I think I may be in conflict on an issue that would be advisory on best recused, but as long as I'm not acting in my capacity as a commissioner, I can still go lobby those supervisors. As long as I'm not acting in capacity as a commissioner.
I'll say that I don't know that there's anything to preclude you from talking to any individual supervisor. As long as it's done in a manner that's not violating the Brown Act.
Right.
If you're doing it in cahoots with any of your fellow
commissioners. Well, that's what I'm saying, is I could act in a personal role, send a consultant for somebody. I have to recuse at this body, but I can actually still consult and lobby individual supervisors.
It depends. So that when an issue like that were to come up, my best recommendation is come talk to me. You can run it by staff first if you want, or come talk to me and we'll go through the specific facts of your circumstance and really put the best analysis together of whether or not there's a conflict or even the appearance of a conflict that the board wants us to.
Mark, is there like a lot of case law that envelops the conflict of interest for these kinds of conditions?
There is. In the context of 1090, there's a whole body of law. And the California Supreme Court not that long ago made it abundantly clear that, for instance, independent contractors that meet certain criteria are not only subject to civil repercussions, but they're subject to criminal liability as well. So that was a question that was unresolved until then. In terms of the Political Reform Act, there's a whole, you can go look up on the FPPC's website, there's advisory letters. And that's, you know, when sometimes you run into a conflict issue, Commissioner, that there is no clear answer for, and some people elect to present that problem to the FPPC and say, here's an issue or question I'm having, can you please provide some advice? The problem is they'll publicly publish their opinion and their advice, so you're, you know,
It really goes back to the core question of why were we appointed here? Okay? We were appointed here for a variety of reasons. One, maybe we asked. Maybe we asked because we had an interest in what the commission did. Maybe we had a business. Maybe we had, maybe we hiked. Maybe we birdwatched. Maybe we did this and this and this. All of a sudden, when you take and put personal issues into the equation, it goes to the core of why are we appointed? What prompted us to want to do this, besides our love of civic duty?
Well, let me give you a little bit of good news, because it was all doom and gloom up to this point. So there's a helpful exception to the interest. What is an interest? What is a financial interest? What is a personal interest? It's called the public generally exception. So by virtue of sitting on this commission as a member, you decide an item that impacts a particular regional park. Does that mean you're not allowed to go and enjoy that regional park or that facility that you weighed in on? No. So long as that interest is available to the public generally and is indistinguishable from the public, or from a, let's refer to as a significant segment of the if it's a business interest, you know, you may have interest in business, and the question becomes, you know, is it your interest meet the parameters under the Political Reform Act, which provides very specific parameters. I mean, market share, other parameters that are, like I said, it's a labyrinth of analysis, but there is that exception for the public generally, and whether or not it's distinguishable from a significant segment of the population that would benefit from whatever policy you're taking action on.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? Joe, I've been thinking about that question you asked about the fact that, you know, we're an advisory board and we really don't make the decision. The decision's made by the Board of Supervisors. I think probably the only way that I can see maybe you could tie that conflict of interest is pretty simple formula. If there's anything that you're going to vote on as a body here, it's going to end up being an advisory vote that goes to the Board of Supervisors, then if the Board of Supervisors, because of our advisory vote, ended up benefiting you financially, then you might be in trouble. Other than that, I really see there's a big distance between us and them.
No, he explained exactly how I needed to explain it. That there's even an influence on the vote, and I don't know you've got a conflict. And it's basically what you just said.
Yeah, okay. All right, for those of you, I want to compliment the staff. Attachment B was a great job because it's in red, so you can see all the new stuff there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it's everything that we've rehashed over and over again, including how we're going to count our votes in the future, which was kind of critical for us because that was something that we really needed to get done that night, and we were kind of caught between an quagmire. So if there's no other comments or questions, I'm going to go ahead.
I'd like to make an amendment.
too late. I'm just teasing.
I'd like to add to the bylaws that the chairman of this commission is also a member of the board of directors of the Orange County Parks Foundation board, as is the director of OC Parks. But that doesn't need to be part of the bylaws because the bylaws relate to us. And I think, and that's going forward. This is a foundation in perpetuity. It's got millions and millions of dollars in assets and responsibilities. And I think it should be included in the bylaws.
Who appoints members to that?
Excuse me?
Who appoints the members to it?
Okay, the
to the foundation.
The foundation came up with who should be on the board, who the core should be. Okay?
Right.
And that core included the chairman of the Parks Commission and the director of OC Parks.
If I can, Commissioner Ashton.
So I got a question. Can we direct that in our bylaws? I mean, the foundation is separate from us.
We really don't know that. It's just
that, right?
Well, I think there's a question if I can just reframe it a little bit, if I can. So what Commissioner Ashton is referring to is the Parks Foundation, by their own bylaws, includes a member of the Parks Commission, right? The Parks Commission itself is silent on the issue, right? So I think what Commissioner Ashton is proposing is changing that. I'm not sure what the correct vehicle would be, and perhaps, Mark, if you have an opinion on that, I'd welcome it. But he was suggesting that maybe in the bylaws, they could just address like, hey, by the way, you know, it would be good if we were having a member of the Parks Commission on the foundation. I don't believe it's required because the Parks Foundation itself already has that within their own bylaws. So I think that it's more like a cleanup that Commissioner Ashton is referring to. And I don't know if this is the vehicle that it can be added to or if at a future meeting they can just put it on the agenda, add that item on the bylaws. I'm just not sure how it would work.
The problem there is that this commission doesn't govern and have jurisdiction over the Parks Foundation.
Right.
It's a separate entity. This commission has the ability to, as collectively, appoint somebody, select who that person is, or to even suggest to the foundation that they continue to include a member of this commission and the director of OC Parks. But it's currently in their bylaws, so that...
That's correct.
So they already require it by their own governance. So. If that ever becomes an issue, there's nothing to preclude this commission from fighting the good fight and insisting that they maintain the membership from this commission and OC Parks.
Except I think it's important to ensure that this commission continues
to play a role.
To play a role in that foundation.
But we can't. We don't govern that commission. For that foundation, so we don't have any jurisdiction over saying we're going to put our chair on the court.
I'd like somebody from county real estate to say that.
Well,
Don Brennan gave us 22,000 acres with the understanding that we'd have a foundation. And I was on the board, I was chairman of this commission, and I also was. I may have been chairman of the foundation.
Can I give you a suggestion on how to clear it up? Just put it in our bylaws, if OC Parks has the ability to appoint a commissioner to another agency, it'll be at the discretion of the chair, who goes. So the chair gets to appoint. And so if that seat exists, then we can appoint whoever, the chair can send whoever they want in that position. But to say that we will be on another foundation board, I don't think legally we could do
that. That'd be a stretch.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, because that's acting within your authority
right.
to amend your bylaws in a manner to designate your commission, your chair, the authority to designate who would sit on the Parks Foundation.
Come on, okay. Putting together subcommittees that we need them.
Hmm?
It's like putting subcommittees together.
No, I understand.
Right. Yeah. It's a simple process. A lot of cities, the mayors actually make that decision too, with different appointments. So if that's okay with everybody, we'll go ahead and get that taken care of. Okay.
Are we comfortable with that addition, or is it already included within the bylaws?
I don't recall that being in the bylaws, but...
So is this something, since the supervisors already adopted this, yeah. How do we make sure?
No, this is the type of nuanced deviation from the template that's specific to this commission that we could include and propose to the board to incorporate your bylaws for sure.
Okay, good job, Bert.
If we're making a motion to add that, can we just add some clarification that we can work with council to make sure that that is included? And then at least give us something to base on.
I'll make the motion that you work with county council on the language to include that.
Okay.
I'll second. Okay.
Bert wants to make it since it was his idea.
Nope. You got it.
Okay.
Are you the sitting member of the foundation?
I am not.
You're not? Who is? Who's chairman this year?
Coos.
Okay.
So what we'll do is we'll just make this, if there's no objection, we'll go ahead and move forward. Okay?
Yep.
Okay.
No, he made a motion.
Yeah. He made a motion.
Do we have to vote on that?
I just asked for the
motion. You just asked for the opposition.
No opposition.
Okay, let's take a roll call. Go ahead.
Okay.
Smile, Dave.
Vice Chair Talbert?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashland?
Here. Yeah, yes.
Commissioner Wilburn?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Yes.
Commissioner Muller?
Aye.
Okay, now we'll get to item B. This is where the recommended that the board approve the amended Orange County Parks Commission bylaws. Is there a motion for that?
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
Okay, roll call, please.
We're talking about item B?
Yes.
Okay. So we have a motion. Remind me, who did the motion on that?
Bert.
Bert. Okay. And then the second was?
As well.
Vice Chair Shelbert?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashland?
Yep.
Commissioner Wilburn?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Yes.
Commissioner Muller?
Aye.
Okay, great.
Great. We'll get to go to item number C. This is our October field trip. I will just make a quick recommendation. We do have a choice of three proposed dates. We have three proposed locations. I had a chance to discuss this with our staff. The thing that came out of it I thought was kind of cool was on October 6th at Heritage Hill, Historic Park, we would have an opportunity to go to the following light program. We'll actually get there and see everything before anybody else gets to see it. It won't be crowded. We get to see the lights come on for the first time.
Wow.
And they give us a special tour, and it's kind of a special event. Now, if anybody else would rather go to O'Neill Park or to Key Ranch History Park, that's cool too, George Ranch. Mm-hmm. But I would recommend that we do what the staff thought would be really a desirous field trip, which would be item number one, to the Heritage Hill Historic Park.
What city is it?
Are you about Festival of Lights out of the harbor? For Halloween season?
Yeah. Heritage Hill?
I'm not sure.
It's in Lake Forest, Commissioner.
Lake Forest?
Oh, yeah. Way up there?
It's always way up there for someone.
I think that's wonderful. I think Heritage Hill is playing. And I don't think we've been into any field trip in Lake Forest that I could recall.
Not in recent memory.
Yeah,
I remember when we had a Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I went to the Christmas thing, got chestnuts. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Somebody snuck in a bottle of something.
No.
All right, we have a motion. We have a motion.
I make a motion that we go to Heritage Park and you, Commissioner Shaw, get to flip the switch.
Well, we do have a first. You want a second, Joe?
Thank you. Then, if there's a first, I'll second.
Okay, great.
With the flip the switch.
Okay. Just for clarification, sorry. There was a. So, who was the motion on that?
Joe.
Okay.
I just moved.
David, second.
Sorry, there's
it's fine.
Some temporary confusion on my part. That's all. Yeah, I apologize.
It's fine.
Vice Chair Shawford?
Yes.
Commissioner Ashland?
Aye.
Commissioner Wilburn?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Yes.
Commissioner Muller?
Aye.
Okay, before we enter our exciting upcoming events.
Vice Chair, if I can interrupt, we also need to select a date for the field trip.
Well, they told us that October 6th was the best day.
Yes, all three are available. So if October 6th was the selection, then we should clarify that.
That's when you have to turn the lights on.
Yes, yes, correct.
It's
yes.
Thursday night.
So we're going to
be the same time as the regular.
Correct. Yes. Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
Okay, before we get into our exciting upcoming events, we're now going to get a report from our OC Parks Director.
Well, the report from the director is the report on the exciting upcoming events. So we can do two things at once. As usual, in your packet, you have a number of things that we wanted to highlight. And I'll leave that for you. I'm going to highlight a couple that are coming up. We do have, I just want to say, because we did such a great job this year with our concerts and movies, I believe we haven't totaled it yet, but we'll have record attendance at all of our facilities. We were discussing in the future, we really don't have room to add to attendance, where we're basically at capacity for all of our concerts. We are getting great attendance at the movies, and we do have one more movie tomorrow night. That's at Salt Creek. It's the Pirates of the Caribbean. Yep. So if folks want to come to that, I would highly recommend it. They're doing a great job. They have a pre-show entertainment, and if you have it, you can just look on our social media to see the pictures of what it looks like when you're watching the sunset. Sunsets over the Pacific Ocean at Salt Creek, and then they start the movie. So it's about as good of an experience as you can get in our park system. I highly recommend it.
Well, it's because it's a new point.
Well, you're allowed to say that. There you go. We also have coming up on September 10th, we have kind of a big day at parks. We have a couple events I want to highlight. One, we have fishing derby at Tri-City Park. So that's great. I think we're expecting a huge attendance there. And that would be in the morning. Then in the evening, we're going to have the Moon Festival over at Mile Square Regional Park. Also expecting huge attendance there. Really cool event, and I'd recommend any of those that if you want to come, just like reach out and we can make arrangements to see if you can get parking and get you in. And then the other thing you saw that we handed out an invitation. So this is an invitation for Parks Commissioners. This is not for the general public. We're having a 125th anniversary event of Irvine Regional Park. And so it's a huge day for us. We're going to have, this particular portion of it may not be the most exciting portion, but we are going to recognize members of the Irvine family that will be present. They were the ones that originally gave the park to the county back in 1897. So not these particular members of the Irvine family, but their descendants will be present. And then we'll also have members of the Irvine Company present that will be recognizing. Historically, the Irvine Company has provided gifts of land as well. I think Commissioner Ashton was referring to the 20,000 acres that was provided to us about 10 years ago now, a little bit more. So that it's going to be really fun. After that, there's a public celebration that's available all day. We're working on the details, but they're highlighting some of the historic elements that we've done out there. But they're also having like a concert. So there's and also the pumpkin patch. It's a large event will be out there. And Commissioner Hansen and I had a chance to visit our zoo, so the zoo will be open that day as well. So I would recommend if you're entertaining coming on out, we'd really love to have you for the sort of private event in the morning at 8:30, and then hang out and check out what you want to for the rest of the day. But at least there's guaranteed parking if you come out at 8:30. After that, you're on your own. You know?
Since you mentioned the zoo,
yes.
Have the three representatives from the gentleman in the suit, lady in the suit. Have you been to the zoo?
I take my family there all the time.
Excellent.
You've never been to the zoo?
You gotta go.
Have you been to the zoo?
Of course.
Go to the zoo. This is a must see.
It's spectacular.
Must see.
Yeah, and
if you talk to that guy, you might even be on the stage.
Yeah, we can maybe help out. Our staff loves, and we had a chance to show it off to one of this body. Commissioner Hansen came by with his family. It was great. I always enjoy it, and our staff just loves showing off. And with the inclusion of the large mammal exhibit out there, speaking of record attendance, the zoo's having record attendance in large part because of that. They're going to, unless something really strange happens, like a heat wave or something like that, they're going to shatter the record from the previous year, and they're going to get there pretty quick. So it's just, it's great. That's the ones I wanted to highlight. What we will be doing is we'll follow up on the paper invitation that you got. You're going to be getting an email invitation as well sent to you. So just RSVP to the email invitation, and then we'll make sure that you show up there. And I really would personally appreciate it if you can attend. No Brown Act violations, right? Is that correct? If they come to an open public event by my invitation. So.
Under the constraints that Mr. Cleveland.
Well, there you go. Thank you very much.
Good. I did want to compliment you on what a great tour we had recently at Miles Square Park.
Yeah.
We had a chance to go out and see the, Michael and I had a chance to see the lake as it's being created. We got to see where the camping's going to be for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the story that the only thing that came out of the movement of reclamation of the water was one turtle.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a snapping turtle, which they had to find a home for. So
correct.
It was quite educational.
Correct, yeah.
But anyway, as that progresses, I think it'd be good for us to all go take a look at it.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did discuss at that tour that we're anticipating at the beginning, January of next year, in that time frame, that they'll be completing phase one. And that might be a good time to contemplate after that coming out and taking a tour.
Would you be kind enough, please, to give us a brief update on the status of Irvine Lake?
Well, there's really
nothing. Fishing concessions there.
The fishing concession continues like as it is at Irvine Lake. My understanding is that they're moving forward sort of with the RFP proposal. They're working with the water districts currently. So there's really nothing to report in terms until we get an agreement with all parties. But the intention is to do an RFP, bring out a vendor there, and then see if we can provide the fishing through that. There's an element where they do have plans in the future to drain the lake and repair the dam out there.
Mm-hmm.
There may be a timing issue with an RFP being issued to coincide with after that work is done, if only because a vendor, if they were looking to his financial interest, they want to make sure that there's water in the lake and then before they bid on. Yeah. So there, at the moment, there isn't much of an update on that.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anything from the board? Go ahead.
I forgot to ask earlier, on page one of the staff report that was the commission outline, one of the items there, it requires the election of commission officers to take place during the last meeting of the year. And I think with history, we've done it like in the first
correct
month. So I just wanted to make sure that, and then we don't meet in December. So I just wanted to, I believe we should have that as a action item in November's agenda. Does that make sense?
Yes, that would be what
is
we
is that new
to
that they pushed for that now?
That's,
is that one of the new things?
Correct, that would be one of the revisions.
Okay,
that
I'm sorry that I forgot to bring that up when you were presenting. Okay, so we'll put that on the agenda for November then?
Yep.
Okay.
So anyone else?
Perfect.
Anyway, thank you very much for your presentation. I did have one more question. I think we have a commission for the historical
mm-hmm
part.
Sure.
One of the members there told me that he was being required to take the ethics training online.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why do we, what's the difference between them and us? Just a quick response.
In terms of having to take it online?
We can do it either way.
Does this body have to take ethics training?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you absolutely.
Are you?
You have until December.
Look at us, Dave.
Guys, I've already time out. I've already done it. I'm just checking. Thank you.
So I have a question for you.
Yes.
So I'm being chased right now for my AB1234. I'm termed out at the end of the year, so I'll be off all these commissions. But I did it December of 2021, and they're saying that it doesn't count for this year.
The requirement, if I remember correctly, is once every 2 years.
Right.
Oh, cool.
So depending on when they're counting from.
But OC Marks is telling me, I've got no, all the other commissions took it. And I still can't figure out, because I'm at the end of my eighth year, I shouldn't have had to do it last year at all. Actually, I should have at the beginning of last year, but OC Parks is saying no, because it was done in 2021. It's not valid for this year.
I think it's something we can take a look at,
okay,
to see.
Are you terminated?
I couldn't qualify.
Turned out.
Yeah.
And then that's the other thing. I've got
two more minutes.
Yeah. Two more chat.
What I'll do is Mark and I can look into that together and just make sure what the application is. It could be just something as simple as an automated system, and that might be just what's going on, but we'll take a look at it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I sent over the one from December last year, since it's got to be done this year.
Thank you. I just will tell you that I am still pushing for stinking badges, so we have badges, so we go to the parks, people know who we are. And also, my other great hope is that before winter comes, we can get an OC Parks jacket. So we'll see what happens. You never know. Santa
collateral materials.
Santa might be good to us. You never know. Anyway, thank you all, audience, whoever. Appreciate the staff. Thank you.
But can you check on Jim? He's always here.
Is that the oh yeah, Jim Carr.
Can you check on Jim?
I'll call him.
Yep.
That's a good point. We can follow
him. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. Well, Commissioner Walmart, are you going to take the lead on following up on that? Okay.
I will.
Thank you.
You're going to call him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I call him fairly often.
Yeah, that's it.
Not sure.
Yeah.
He's had some health problems lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so you know, in the bylaws, just the clause says that if you have to let the chairman know with a phone call one day ahead of time, if you're not going to be here. So. Anyway, again, staff, thank you all. Everybody drive home safely, and have a